You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today, we continue our Getting to Know the Council of Presidents series, and it takes us to the Ohio District.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul at csp.edu.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Kevin Wilson. He serves as president of the Ohio District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Pastor Wilson, thanks for joining us today.
Certainly.
All right, so for this series, we kick off each episode with the lightning round so that we get to learn everything super important about you. Are you prepared?
I am prepared.
All right. Very good. All right. You ready? Favorite color?
Orange.
Not what I was expecting. Okay.
10 points for that one.
Favorite cuisine?
Ah, me gusta la comida latina.
Oh.
Latin, Mexican, Cuban, whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Favorite book? And we know, as a pastor, you probably love the Bible, the Lutheran Confession. So if you want to build on that, we can.
Transforming Mission, David Bosch.
Okay. Might have to come back to that. Favorite office supply? Very important question.
Medium Z-grip pen. That zebra, yeah.
Okay.
Z-grip pen. I don't know if I've experienced. That's a new one.
That's a new one.
look, I'm Lutheran, they're frugal, and they work.
Oh.
All right.
Perfect.
Favorite dessert?
Pecan pie.
Ooh.
Yep.
That's a great one.
With you on that one. I like any pie, but favorite vacation destination, whether you've been there or not?
Designated wilderness area I have not yet explored. Designated wilderness area that I have not yet explored.
Oh, there's stories there.
Let's go to another one.
All right. Favorite hymn. Now we know this one is maybe an unfair question, but.
Arise and shine in splendor.
Oh, that's a good one.
There is a story about it.
That's a great hymn.
We'll save it.
It's my favorite Epiphany hymn.
And favorite time of day?
5 a.m., 5 to 6.
All right. A morning person.
Nice.
Very specific morning person.
Nice. So tell us about where you grew up.
Grew up in Wichita, Kansas.
Tell us about the community where you grew up, what it was like in Wichita, Kansas. Yeah. For those of us who aren't familiar with Wichita.
Wichita, Kansas. I grew up in an overgrown cow town, south central Kansas. It was marked by, it's like a little Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
About 310,000, 320,000 people at the time, but still heavily tied to agriculture. Aeronautics, a lot of do with airplanes, and one of the marks of Wichita was entrepreneurs, because you pretty much had to be an entrepreneur because you didn't have resources and people driving through, and so those all kind of came together. Like Austin, pretty eclectic. You've got extremes of society, and so we had we're talking 50 years ago, I had strong pro-life, and we had the opposite. And so it was interesting to have that kind of mix.
Tell us about how growing up in Wichita led to, through grade school, high school, college, how that eventually led to seminary.
Yeah, I got out of high school, had a lot of encouragement from my parents, from church, to go to St. John Winfield as a college, go to Concordia Seward. And I pushed back. Ended up going to state school in Wichita State, stayed local, got out of college, encouraged to go to the seminary. Why don't you go to seminary? Let's go straight there. Yeah. I became a journalist.
Oh.
So I was a journalist coming out and worked for a few years and then wanted a master's degree. So, okay, no one in my family has a master's. I'm debt free. I'm single. And applied a couple of universities for political science to seminary, to Concordia St. Louis, got into a law school. And, of course, chose University of Texas. So I'm still pushing back. The breakthrough was this. It was not actually in Wichita, but it was with grandparents whom I went to see after my last journalism job because I was moving to Texas. They were in Illinois. I didn't want to see them again. I mean, I was going to go to Corpus Christi, work for a year, get residency. I'm too cheap to pay out-of-state tuition for grad school. And as I'm leaving, I mentioned it's a very long drive. And my grandfather's like, what do you mean? St. Louis is 2 hours. And I'm like, oh, you haven't heard. You know, I'm going to UT. I'm not going to Concordia. And he's like, why? I said, well, I'm debt-free, but I'm dead broke. That's a big piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I need my languages, right? I have to start now. I can't wait for fall. He said, what's it cost? I said, room, board, stuff at the time, $300. He looks at grandma. Grandma looks at him. They nod. And he says, and I quote, this morning I cashed an IRA for $300 for the Fort Wayne Scholarship Fund. I guess we could send it to St. Louis. Now, where are you going? And I said, I think I'm taking summer Greek. And that was it. I ended up in St. Louis and never made it to Texas.
So that's amazing.
Wow.
So I finally stopped pushing against the guidance and encouragement of the family and friends.
Hmm.
So take us to summer Greek. What was that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Summer Greek was, I was totally unprepared. I was expecting a graduate school, not confirmation on steroids. So there's a bit of an awakening. So summer Greek did not go well for me. A number of us struggled. At least five of us did not pass. And we were blessed that our teacher, our professor, Dr. Schmidt, said to us, look, I can't, the math doesn't work. You can't actually get a passing grade, but I will teach you at lunch if you want to keep going and come back in the fall. And four of us said yes. And all four are still pastors today. So it just took a little time to work through change of culture. Wichita, Kansas has some diversity. There's certainly more diverse towns, but St. Louis, Clayton, the seminary is the first time I'd been in an all white community.
Hmm.
And that culture shock hit me hard, even for the summer, was more than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd ever been in pickup basketball games where no one could dunk. It's just, what is this? So there's adjustment, not just academically, but kind of culturally. And so there you go. That was summer Greek. We called ourselves the Bluebird class. It was entertaining.
Well, we're all glad that you are still a pastor, that you got through Greek one way or another.
Oh, it was a blessing in the sense and that, you know, once I got through it, I was ready to roll.
Yeah.
Right. So the exegetical classes, all that stuff went really well because it's very fresh. I've just learned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell us more about your seminary experience, your classes, your professors, what it was like learning theology in that kind of environment.
Yeah. It's you know, again, it was, I expected a graduate school. I got more of a, it really did have that sense of confirmation. It is much more structured and there's not a whole lot of give and take. So once I adjusted to that, I think the main thing God did for me was mature me in the faith and mature me as a person. You know, looking back at it, I haven't really reflected on this for a while, but I came in with some, I'd worked a couple, 3 years. So I had a little more experience. I know what it's like to earn my own insurance.
Mm.
A lot of my classmates had not. I had a background in evangelism. I'd gone to a state university. The faith had been tested. So there was a sense of, okay, you know, that God has sustained me so far. So on one hand, it's like, okay, doctrinal, you know, knowledge is really good. I have a background. And then it turned out my scriptural knowledge was weak.
Mm.
And so it was really helpful to have the, you know, to learn the exegetical, to have the men to walk alongside, to mentor, to teach, to really get through the scriptures and get deep in the scriptures. And that's part of the reason Bosch's transforming mission appeals to me so much. There's some theology in it that I absolutely disagree with, but to take the scriptures and really unpack the Missio Dei and the fact that confessional Lutherans a century ago were very influential in developing the Missio Dei. But that all really starts at the seminary. So
you mentioned your expectation. You had expectations of a graduate school. Yeah. How would you describe seminary being different than your expectations of graduate school?
Instead of being taught how to think and discover for yourself, being told this is truth, this is what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it's the directive versus the discovery. And the other piece is you're not there for banter and debate. You can have discussions, right? But we're not here to debate. You know, we're here to learn. So please calm down and stay focused. I might have heard that a few times. A few. So, but well, I, you know, it's a distinction.
Yeah.
what class stands out the most, or what class was your favorite class at seminary?
The exegetical. Yeah. If you go through Greek a couple of times and learn Hebrew, all right there when you're starting seminary. No, it was the scripture classes, whether it was the Gospel of Mark or one of the Old Testament classes, and whether Dr. Volz or Dr. Herbert, the men who were teaching the Bible classes really stood out. It wasn't, you know, there's those helpful classes. Everything was very practical, but that's what really stood out. And I don't understand this. I need to thank my pastors growing up and my, especially my mother. Doctrinally, dogmatics, I was ready. They had prepared me for Lutheranism, not for the Bible behind it as much, but that piece, good classes, but okay. I've heard this all my life. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Do you have I don't know that I want to ask a favorite book of the Bible, but if exegesis is, if those exegetical classes were your favorite, is there some topic or part of scripture that you really just enjoy digging into?
I like digging into the differences in the Gospels, and trying to figure out from the text itself and then the context. All right, this is the same account, and it's just a different view. It's from Mark versus Matthew. And what was Mark trying to get at? And how do I avoid merging the two when I'm starting to preach? You know, like, no, let's be faithful to the text. And then, you know, so I will find myself getting lost in that rabbit hole once, okay, more than once in a while still. Because I am trying to figure out and discover and make sure I can apply it. And and I like it, so.
Yeah.
We are talking with the Reverend Dr. Kevin Wilson. He serves as president of the Ohio District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We'll continue our conversation in this series in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are in our Getting to Know the Council of Presidents series today in the Ohio District. We're not actually there. The Ohio District came to us. The Reverend Dr. Kevin Wilson, president of the Ohio District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So we've talked about your favorite things. We've talked about seminary and life leading up to seminary formation. Take us from seminary formation into where to go from seminary next.
Yeah. I was placed, called by Trinity Lutheran Church in Leavenworth, Kansas, as an assistant to the pastor. Assistant, there used to be an actual category of assistant pastor. And I supported it, even though I had a little more life experience than a lot of my peers. I had church background, but none of my family members were church workers. You know, it just made sense. Let's get some more seasoning. And I ended up serving in Leavenworth for a decade. Sometimes I just say I was in Leavenworth for a decade. That comes across well. You were talking about a town that had four maximum security prisons, major military base. It is still the most liberal state in this county in Kansas. Hmm. And so that was not a good fit. But you work with the congregation. So I was assistant pastor after a year, sole pastor, and then senior pastor. And we went from kind of trying to find our identity to, I think, pretty healthy in the middle section, years 5-6, and then we went multi-site. The vision shifted from the Church for Lutherans in southern Leavenworth City to the Lutheran Church for Leavenworth County. Hmm. So we needed Word and Sacrament campuses 20 minutes apart in order to reach a county. And to get there, leadership, myself, had a lot of dissatisfaction. We weren't baptizing many adults. God was certainly bearing fruit as far as adult confirmation and all those cool things, and they are cool. And we had gone from whatever 300 to 500 in worship, but we weren't baptizing. And one of the stewardship chair, I think, did some research and said, hey, supposedly new churches kind of lead to new people in the faith. Okay. And so multi-site, it took 7 years for the sites to become freestanding churches, but they're there, you know, so that was kind of cool. Also, we staffed, whether I did the staffing, it was according to your giftedness, how God wired you. So I went out and started the campuses, which kind of explains how I was called as a missionary at large to Phoenix next.
Uh-huh.
Because I had some experience with getting started, although it doesn't really count as a church plant. I mean, if it didn't work, I'm still senior pastor at a church 20 minutes away. Ooh, that's a big risk I took there. Yeah, well, moving to the desert with no family to a closed mission to try to restart it when you're used to 4 services a weekend. Yeah, that was a more of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
But we, I was convinced, and that's where God was calling, and that's what we did for the next 4 years, almost 5 years.
Tell us about your time in Phoenix and eventually how you ended up in Ohio, because we're not quite in Ohio yet.
Right, the other side of the country.
Yeah, it's the opposite direction.
I tell you, one of the benefits of living in Phoenix is as I'm doing the orientation for the Synodical Convention, I can actually explain how to survive the summers because my family and I survived the summer. I was installed on the 4th Sunday in July. It was 118. So
dry heat, though, right?
Yeah. Now, Phoenix at the time was growing so rapidly. Yeah, it's dry heat. But if you're in the oven, it doesn't matter whether you're basted or not. It's you're in the oven. No, we were in a lower middle class suburb of Phoenix. We were marked by jacked up pickups. So I had a 3-inch lift on mine, and that was enough to have credibility in my neighborhood without being prideful. But that's where we were called, and we got our restart going. And let's see, it took a year and a half to get land. By year 3, we had the first building done. But again, it was a rapidly growing area. It was different not having leaders, right? Having to raise up folks to lead. Because leaders would drive past Missouri Synod folks. So many drove past our church. It's like, there's this really established church with all the bells and whistles, and you're meeting at a Chinese restaurant, which is true. And to this day, I still, when I smell soy, I want to start chanting. So it had an impact, meeting in that Chinese restaurant, which, by the way, was owned by Koreans who let us use it for free, which is kind of cool.
Wow.
But you bounce around and starting new churches, and we bounced in several places and got the preschool going to help work with the church and congregation. But after 4 years, if you count the last campus we started in Kansas, that was 2 churches in 7 years. And I was pretty fried. I also thought I had some divine dissatisfaction. We still weren't baptizing as many adults as we prayed for and asked God to do. And so for, in starting new churches, the handbook I've used is the Book of Acts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, we study, we'll preach it through. And in chapter 13, there's a point where God calls Saul and Barnabas out of Antioch and sends them on the first missionary journey. Very quickly in chapter 13, it goes from Saul, Barnabas and Saul to Paul and Barnabas. Barnabas takes a back seat. Saul, you're the leader. You've been discipled. And so I'd started praying, Lord, how can I be Barnabas? How can I be, you know, stop being in front and doing this, you know, leading from the front? And is there a way to do that? And also before the next building program. And within 6 months, I had interviews with 2 districts for district staff positions. And that's how we ended up in Ohio.
Okay.
Had no connection to Ohio. Hadn't been past Illinois as far as going. Indiana. I'd been in Indiana. Hadn't been past Indiana. But we'd been praying. My wife had been praying. Is there a way to be in a Barnabas-type role? District staff position. This was a facilitator, like regional facilitator, who also worked with all the new church starts.
Hmm.
That made a lot of sense. As far as the interview, let's face it, we're in Phoenix. Normally you go from Cleveland to Phoenix, not the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland folks. So I interviewed at home office. My wife is sitting over there. I can still see her in my peripheral vision. And late in the interview, someone finally says, Pastor Wilson, do you understand Ohio District includes Ohio, West Virginia, and Northern Kentucky? And I went, seriously? Do they know that in West Virginia? I'm pretty sure it's not real popular to be called Ohio. And they're like, well, that's why I wanted to talk to you, interview you. And I'm like, hold it. And so I said, obviously a man not needing a call at the moment, you want to interview me because I'm an educated redneck? A little hillbilly ancestor here? And there's silence. And finally, we would never say it that way. And I literally said, I still see my wife shaking her head. No, I'm afraid. I said, look, maybe the first time in my life that heritage has been honored and not made fun of. If you want an in-person interview, I'd be honored. And if you don't, that's fine. You've already made my day. My wife's going, no, not in person. Don't show up. And 20 years later, we're still in Ohio. But it's because my mother's side of the family is a German Lutheran. Mm-hmm. And my father's side, Scottish Appalachian. So we're Ohio, West Virginia, and North Kentucky. I'm comfortable wherever. You know, I know how to act in West Virginia without getting shot. I can handle that.
Yeah.
You got to keep people from rebaptizing you, but that I can do that too. So there you go.
Tell us more about the Ohio District. I was just going to ask what makes up the Ohio District. I think you've summed that up for us.
More exciting than we thought.
Yeah.
150 churches in Ohio, West Virginia. My accent's going to come back. 150 churches in Ohio, West Virginia, Northern Kentucky, vast majority in Ohio. Mm-hmm. They're in Ohio. And so it's a, 150 churches, 22 schools, elementary, high schools, and then 32 early learning centers. Mm-hmm. So it's a middle-sized district by however you measure it, we're kind of a middle-sized district.
What are some unique things about the Ohio District other than the fact that it is more than just Ohio?
I think it'd be presumptuous for me to say there's anything truly unique with the Ohio District. I mean, even with the name of Synod, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be Ohio, with Missouri, Ohio, and other states. But even then, it was Missouri and Ohio. But, you know, we have a lot of churches in Cleveland, Youngstown area. But, hey, there's a lot of churches in Detroit and Pittsburgh. We're in Appalachia. Well, so the Southeastern District. So I don't know if there's anything truly by itself unique, but we've really got a mix of all of that. And the total mix might be unique. There's a reason. The state has historically been a swing state for elections in the United States. It's mm-hmm. because of the mix of people. And if you have churches throughout the state, then you have some reflection on that. And so I have to look it up before I go to a church. You kind of go, okay, is this one, I mean, is it totally high church or is it all totally contemporary? There's some thinking you have to do as you go through the different regions and the different congregations.
Deeply philosophical question now. Okay. Why are you a pastor in the LCMS today?
Yeah. Scripture. Mm. Yeah. The sole source and norm for faith and life is Scripture. And that's the teaching of the Missouri Synod. And that's where it stands. We're back to exegetical, aren't we? Going to make a nice circle here.
Like a true journalist.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yes.
Yeah. College, I did some visiting. And not short-term visiting. I spent a year with the American Baptist. I spent a year in a Roman Catholic or CIA. And then there were some shorter visits as a journalist because when you're new, you work Sundays. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. And trying to find a Missouri Synod church that worshiped anytime besides Sunday morning where I was living, the two different communities, was challenging. So you check things out. And so by the time I was able to, my last journalism job, have Sunday off, I was at Trinity Lutheran Church in rural Block, Kansas, because, this is the place where the Scripture is the foundation. It's fully inerrant. It's most, just as importantly, interpreted in context. Very important, because I'd heard some crazy stuff when I was out there looking around. Like, okay, so that's the foundation. And with the confessions being an accurate interpretation thereof, you've got this support system built into the Word. And not equal to the Word, but, you know, it's, well, we were blessed with adult converts. The first light bulbs usually went on studying the Gospel of Matthew, and the second was Luther's Small Catechism, when they'd start to see a structure to the faith. I'm like, oh, this is my relationship with God, and this is how it works, all in one place. Like, so there you go.
Fabulous. Now, you said there's a story behind your favorite hymn, Arise and Shine in Splendor. We do love hymns around here. So I have to ask you what this story is.
You know, we were blessed with three children. And the first time I held each of the children, our children, alone. So it was not right after birth. But when my wife was asleep and it was quiet, and the kids, in every case, we did not have a restful child when I was holding the murderer. I wanted the most peaceful hymn I could think of to sing or hum. And that tune that goes with Arise and Shine. And then the lyrics are so hopeful. I mean, you're holding a newborn. It's Epiphany. And I've been known to switch and maybe put Lo, How a Rose Was Blooming to it. But that's why, because it's imprinted on me as it is on our kids. That was the most comforting music I could find.
Vacation destination, you said lost in the woods. No, wait. Designated wilderness area, not yet
lost,
explored.
Yeah. I thoroughly enjoy going into wilderness areas and kicking around and exploring and learning. And that was one of the great things about living in Phoenix. I mean, yeah. You get out and there's all sorts of places to investigate, many places where you could die. Mm-hmm.
What's the wildest thing you've found in unexplored territory?
That's a good question. Okay, twice, this has happened twice. Twice I have had bear fever, which is when you have an uncontrolled, a fight or flight reaction where you want to flee and you're trying, and it's just, it can paralyze you. The first time I was waiting, we'd taken a youth group to Lame Deer, Montana on a mission trip. I came back a different way to meet family in the Black Hills of South Dakota, and I hiked, I was a day early. So by myself, hiked Crow's Peak and slept under the stars. And I had got into a, you know, tried to kind of hide myself. And in the middle of the night, a group of elk, a herd of elk came through. And I about lost it. And the second one was in the Otter Wilderness in West Virginia. It's a designated wilderness area. And I was fishing, fly fishing for the little brook trout. And I spooked a, we call a hole, or a place where a trout had been at. So I gave it 20 minutes and came back to it. And as I came back, I realized there were some bear tracks, which is really cool. Until you realize one of the bear tracks was in my track. So now I am got to be within a half mile of a black bear.
Oh, no.
I'm from Kansas, all right? We haven't had bears forever. So I'm like, yeah, Lord, I think it's time for me to go home. I am going to the truck now, and I'm stopping my, and I did. I fled. So those are maybe not the most interesting. I suppose the most interesting have been some hieroglyphs found in the Sonoran Desert.
Wow.
You know, you don't know the last person to see him. There's been some cool stuff like that, but the most memorable been, oh my goodness. I'm from Wichita, Kansas, but my father's an agronomist. So he worked with a lot in the country with different wheats, and we lived on the edge of town, a lot of access to outdoor stuff. And so it really sunk in with me. And today I don't take quite as many risks in wilderness areas, because I'm not quite as young, but I will still go by myself. I just tell everyone where I'm going and bring a GPS thing with me.
That's wise.
Yeah.
So they can find my body when I'm... There you go.
The Reverend Dr. Kevin Wilson, President of the Ohio District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour and joining us for this series.
Thank you.
That was a blast. You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.